Central Illinois, and streaming live worldwide at weft.org.
Let's get on with the show, Linda. It is Thursday, January 6th, 2022. It's our first show of the new year, and we're kind of breaking it in with some exciting stuff.
Right. We got to see A Raisin in the Sun last night in Bloomington Normal, and you'll hear our interviews with some of the actors in that show in just a few minutes. We pre-recorded it right before we saw the show, and it was great. I can't wait. I hope that we get a chance to go back and see it again.
At first, I was kind of apprehensive about having interviews with the cast right before the show, but the energy and the excitement that they had just about to go on. This is the first show we've seen at Community Players Theater. They have their own theater, which is remarkable. It's seats we've estimated around 270. Imagine there's going to be a lot of room to spread out, and there's going to be a mask requirement. We got to talk with Anthony Overton, who's playing Walter Lee Younger, Lane Hill, who's his mama, Lena Younger, Dara Griffin, who is Benita Younger, and also Bradley Ross Jackson, who's Travis Younger. So the three of them pretty much comprise the Younger family. And if you know the show, you'll know what, you know, crucial and interesting characters those four are. But whether you know the show or not, this is one to see. It's you know, I've just recently seen the 1961 movie. The play was written in collaboration with the book author, which the movie was also. So it's all really, really true. And they really did a fantastic job.
And there's a runtime of about 2.5 hours, I believe, and an intermission.
Yeah. So, and it just flew. So if you're at all daunted by that, like, let me just say, it's worth the drive. You are going to want this. It's like one of those great movies where you want it to keep going.
And you'll want to see these actors again and again. They're fun to see on stage, and I'd love to see them in something else.
Yeah, great passion is brought into this. They use the word, you'll hear a lot in the interview, they talk about, you know, the dreams that are present in 1961, present today, and just so much of, you know, what I like to talk to them about and hear from them is how similar they feel their present day journey is with what these characters were faced with.
Kind of sadly in some ways.
But
there's some auditions coming up.
We do have the quick other auditions that we have. Peoria Players has auditions coming up for Sweet Charity, and that is tomorrow and the next day. So we have the link on our audition page at seeattheshow.com, and you can also find the Peoria Players Facebook page.
And even more exciting, we're accepting submissions for Firefly. See You at the Show is doing their first show. And
their first show. It's our first show. Come on.
Right. Sorry.
And so we have our own tab, Firefly's tab at seeyouattheshow.com if you're interested in that. We're going to be officially kind of like rolling out our auditions over the coming weekend. But we're really excited about it. We've got a great director lined up, Jalen Hope, and it's going to be a fantastic show. So look for more on that, but specifically about our auditions, which are coming up really soon. The Now Playing is Raising the Sun. You want to see a show? Get out to Community Players Theater in Bloomington. Here's our interview with the amazing cast of Jennifer Rusk's production of A Raisin in the Sun. Okay, we are on the scene of A Raisin in the Sun at Community Players Theater in Bloomington. We've been given the opportunity to see the preview, the dress rehearsal. It opens this weekend in Bloomington, and we're going to go around. We have four cast members here with us, and we're going to go around and get to meet these great actors. We'll start on the end.
Greetings, everyone. My name is Bradley Ross Jackson, and I am playing Travis Willard Younger in the play.
Hi, my name is Anthony Overton, and I'm playing Walter Lee Younger in the play.
Hi, my name is Elaine McCoy-Hill, and I'm playing Lena Mama in the play.
My name is Dara Griffin, and I will be playing Benita Younger.
Okay, and this is a play that's directed by Jennifer Rusk and produced by Len Childers. It's got a lot of cast members who I've seen their names before around Bloomington Theater. So let's talk about this show first. What, who is most familiar? Has anybody been in A Raisin in the Sun before?
I was adjacent to it. My son was actually set to play Travis last year in Wesleyan's performance before. Year before last?
Before COVID.
I am a current student at Illinois Wesleyan, and we were going to have a student-directed production of it in our Phoenix Theater in the spring of 2020, but unfortunately, because of COVID-19, we had to leave early. Mm-hmm. But yes, we had invited Amby and his son Connor to be a part of that production then as well.
And then that never happened because
unfortunately, we were not able to stage it, but I'm really, really glad that someone was able to, you know, was willing to stage this production in this town because it's such an important play, not just to like the theater canon overall, but also to the African-American community.
Right. So it sounds like you're kind of passionate about this show. Can you tell us why and more about it?
I love this show so much. I don't remember the first time reading it. As far as a familial connection, my mother, actually one of her cousins, Stephen Perry, he played Travis Younger in the original film with Sidney Poitier.
Whoa.
Oh my gosh.
And so I've always had, it's always been really close and important to my family. I think I read it for the first time in high school.
Mm-hmm.
But Benita has a monologue at the top of Act 3 talking about, you know, why she wanted to become a doctor, and I've always really resonated with that, and that's actually a monologue that I used to get into Illinois Wesleyan. But yeah, it's just, I think that we can all agree, especially being African-American actors, that we don't always get the opportunity to be on stage in a setting that is just so
authentic.
Yes, thank you. That's so like authentic to what it is to be African-American. And I mean, yes, this is taking place in the 50s, but it's also incredible and in a way kind of sad how strong the parallels are between what the Youngers are going through and what African Americans are going through right now. And I just, Lorraine Hansberry just does a beautiful job at making all of the characters so human and relatable. I don't think that you'll be able to leave this production like saying that anyone is really like a bad guy, if that makes sense.
Right, right. Yeah.
I agree.
I love shows where people are complex, just like they are in real life.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Art really does imitate life.
Right.
And there are layers to everybody. So what I like about this show is, first of all, I was born in the mid-50s. When this was written and released, my mom remembered Miss Lorraine's name. So instead of naming me Lorraine, she named me Elaine. And so this play has a lot of personal memories for me, for my mom and her sisters, because back in that time, they weren't allowed to really go see anything like that because they lived in Mississippi. But it has such an impact from where it was being produced on Broadway to those people that were living in Mississippi, that my mom, because I kept saying, where did my name come from? I don't have a middle name, what's up? And my aunt reminded me, because my mother has now since passed away, and she said, oh yeah, we remember when Miss, now have you ever read A Raisin in the Sun? And I'm like, yeah. So, you know, so so to me, it has memories of my mom and knowing how much theater and music means to my family. And then just being a part of this cast, being the oldest member in the cast, I love watching these young people on stage. And not only that, but that this play, even though it was written in the early 1950s and put on Broadway, again, I have to reiterate that it could be today,
right.
You know,
right.
Easily today. And but I love the family unit,
mm-hmm.
And I love playing mom.
Yes, I have a similar story as well. My mom was Benita in the play in the 90s, I believe, mm-hmm. when she was in college. And I've had a connection with this play as well. So I think we will all hear this powerful story and take something away from it.
Right.
I can fully agree with that. For me, I found that I have far too many parallels to Walter Lee Younger that I felt a little uncomfortable with as I kept digging into the character. Mm-hmm. My family grew up from the South. My mother and grandmothers were the first to move to Chicago, where I was born. And a lot of the family unit and the way that it dictates mimics a lot of my actual real family, such as having, like, my mother could easily be mistaken for Lena Younger in the play if you ever meet her, because she's just that person that you just see like, oh, she's so sweet. And I'm like, no, she yells at people. I'm with her. You don't understand.
Yeah.
She's that person that everybody I knew growing up called mama, where mm-hmm. She likes to tell the story that I thought I had like 30 brothers and sisters one day and wonder why none of them had to do any chores at home and it was just me, and it was unfair because I was that child. So, yeah. But yeah, it's a lot. There's so many layers to the writing that Hansberry did that it's, it's the type of book that if you read over and over, you find something new every single time. And you see connections, even just this week running through some of the scenes, I felt and seen other connections that I was unaware of other scenes that happen when I'm somewhere else, not on stage. And I'm like, that makes so much more sense of why that is a thing later on, because they're talking about it. And Walter Lee isn't the sharpest tool in the shed sometimes, so it makes sense that I was unaware up until now.
You know, something else that I think is so fascinating is that for this particular family unit, the patriarch there has passed away. And so this is really all geared around the conversations that he and his wife had prior to him, you know, passing away. He worked hard. He wanted things for his family. But because of the way society was, they just weren't available to him. However, after his passing, this story gives the mother the opportunity to possibly make some of those things happen for the family. And then, so there's that turmoil, you know, but they finally get there and they stand together for that thing. And I think that's what any family is about being together and supporting. You don't have to agree about everything, but you support each other, you know, so I love that about this family unit too.
It seemed as though that the, so your husband, so Lena's husband, does he have a name? It's Walter also?
He was Big Walter.
Yeah, he was
Big
Walter.
All right.
Yeah.
So she would invoke him a lot to, in an attempt, I think, to not really shame the other people, but to, I don't know, maybe it was to shame the other people. Like, what's the right word when you say he would be so disappointed in you
not
if
so
he
much
saw
shame.
You?
I think it's more about we expect so much more. We went through all of this, and we want you to go to the next step.
Exactly.
However, because of her age and because of the generational divide there, she doesn't understand that times have changed. Yes, freedom was the thing, but if you don't have the income, you don't have the money, and which Walter lets her know that he sees this every day. Everybody's making money. They're not as old as he is or anything else, and here they are making these big deals and doing all these things. He wants those same opportunities for his family, but they're not allotted, you know, where he can do that. And she's saying, oh, I get it. And he's helping her know, okay, we've grown from just being sharecroppers and slaves, but now there's the industry, and we want to be a part of that.
There are new challenges that we have to conquer now.
Yes.
And I really like how Lorraine Hansberry portrays the fact that, yes, there is this American dream, but it truly is not accessible to everyone.
Yes.
You know, we've heard this.
Intentionally.
You just have to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. If you just work really, really hard, you can make it in America. And it's just like, this is a reminder that it's not just so some people are not afforded those opportunities. Like, we do get the chance, in a sense, to move up in life and, like, advance with, you know, the money that we get. But the money is because our father died.
Right.
And it's like, we shouldn't have to, and there's a character in the show that says it, like, isn't there a problem when, you know, these dreams are just coming from a death of a man?
Right.
You know, so it's like, yeah, we have this opportunity, but at what cost?
Cost,
yeah. And yeah, I think that's also something that we can all relate to as well. Cause I mean, just the fact that we're here and doing this show, this is an opportunity for us. And I mean, you know, we're all actors. We've all been doing things active, like in our community and things like that. And you know, we've done shows here together before, but if it weren't for this specific opportunity being presented, I can't imagine that any of us would have the opportunity to do this show in a setting like this.
Right.
I can agree with that.
Right.
I think the biggest thing that I like about the show is that it's everybody in the show has a dream. And the issue is that so much that it's about which dream everyone thinks that their dream is the way to get to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much that Mama's dream is bad or Beneath's dream is bad, but Walter Lee, lack of a better word, believes that he knows the best way to do it, that he's seen how it really is, and he knows he can get us to the next step. But unfortunately, it's also, Walter Lee hasn't really shown or proven that he can do that, so it's asking to put all your eggs in his basket, yet he hasn't shown he can carry that basket without dropping them all.
Mm-hmm.
And his frustration is that you find out early in the play is that he had a chance to go into business with a friend who is now, like, all better like terms, a millionaire. And that frustration of knowing, it's like, if I'd have played the lottery like I said, we'd be rich. And y'all didn't believe in me, so trust me this time. So for him, he feels even more desperate than anything else is that this, you only normally get one shot, and now he has a second one. He doesn't want to let that go.
Right.
And that's a tough thing for anybody, especially as a parent, to let that go, because you always want more for your children. And for Walter, he saw what happened to his father, and he realizes he's almost in that same exact position that you realize at a certain point the job you have is the job you're going to have till you die. Like, that's it. This is as far as you go. That's your glass ceiling. And he wants to make sure his family goes beyond that.
Mm-hmm. There's a line that Mama says in the play, and she says, talking about Big Walter, that you know, the one thing that Big Walter wanted is for his children to have something, to own something. And she talks about how he would come in at night and he worked so hard. And when he'd come in, he'd slump down on the couch and there's one point, I won't give it all away because y'all need to come to the play. He says, you know, he's standing there and he's reciting to her, you know, seems like God didn't give the black man nothing but dreams, you know, but he did give him children to make those dreams worthwhile. So it's like, when you think about that, and no matter what family, no matter what ethnicity you are in this country today, think about that. So many people could make that statement.
Right.
And just with the challenges that we're having today, be it COVID, be it whatever, there are so many things. And now we're saying, people are saying, I want to work. Well, I don't know if I should go to work. You know, you think about that, mm-hmm. and you're thinking, well, okay, I can see what Big Walter was wanting stuff for this. And I can see why Mama's thinking, sinking into her head that the one thing I want is to be able to leave something for my family.
Right.
You know, that's the one thing I want. And you guys come to the play and find out.
We're going to be seeing it tonight. We're going to come back.
Yeah. Right.
So, Anthony, what do you think happens to this family? What happens to Walter without the money?
You know, I think it's the oddest thing is that there was already an underlying frustration because for Walter, he already, in his mind, he's lost his shot mm-hmm. because he wanted to do it. His family didn't back him up. So for him, it's like, we could have been rich. We could have had our own homes. We could have had cars. I could have been taking care of my entire family, which most people want to do. But it's like, but you didn't believe in me. So now what I'm asking you to trust me, it's the same story. It's like, I don't want to repeat the same, this whole idea that there's something picking at him because it feels like your time's running out. Mm-hmm. And a big theme that's always kind of put through that is a bit too identifiable is generational wealth and having nothing to give on.
Right.
Other than passing debts on to mm-hmm. your mm-hmm. descendants, sadly. And so for Big Walter and Mama, they didn't have anything to really give. And all they have is this apartment that we, as a whole family, are still living in mm-hmm. that has one bedroom.
Right.
And then add on top of that is that having a child, looking forward, it's like, I have nothing to give to Travis, and I don't want to repeat that idea of having nothing at the end of the day to give to my son. And as a father, I completely understand that, which is why I work myself maybe a little bit too much like Big Walter, so I'm going to have to sit down and talk with myself after this and think about that a little bit. But yeah, I think the biggest thing is without this, I think they fall into the same trap of Walter just working up until the day he dies, like his father did.
Right.
I just couldn't help but think when I was watching it that it was maybe what Fences would have been. Like, cause that character, like your character seems maybe like Troy
yes.
10 years beforehand
yes.
when he's drinking, but he isn't as corrupt. He isn't yes. quite as yes. given up.
Oh,
that's a really good connection, actually. I really yes. like that connection and how easily Ruth could turn into Rose, depending
yes.
on how Walter
yeah.
keeps going, and if he keeps going down that
yeah.
path.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's
yes.
Easily yeah. is probably the best thing to say is, even though it's kind of like the preeminent African-American play, it's really just an American play. Any yeah. random family, yeah. there are going to be people I know that see this are going to relate with Walter Lee and kind of see some things like, I kind of do that and kind of think about it like maybe I am going a little too far. There'll be some people that look at Ruth and they'll kind of say like, I feel like that about my family. I don't know what to do to fix my family and I feel like it's falling apart. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that my mother is going to burst into tears at the whole idea of everything that Miss Elaine pulls out on the stage.
Well, the one thing that for me as Mama, the one thing I like that she reflects and she remembers is that they did want to purchase a home. Their goal, even when they got married, was to set aside and be able to purchase something for the family. But we know one thing can happen in life and it can just topple that whole idea down. And then when we were talking about living together, when he said that about the apartment, it's amazing that you have Mama, you had Mama and Big Walter, mm-hmm. then you have the son, mm-hmm. and he brings his wife, and then they have a baby, mm-hmm. where you still have a daughter that's there. All these people are living in this small, confined place, mm-hmm. having to get along. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
And it's so important that everybody kinds of, the space is only so big.
Right.
But you know, you gotta give everybody their spot within that space. Mm-hmm. And I think that says a lot about the way she wrote this piece. You know, there's so many levels and depths to either the anger, the love, mm-hmm. The frustration. There's so many levels to it. And then you have, when I think about it, because I'm thinking about myself right now, but anyway, when you have a daughter-in-law and you bring her in, but this daughter-in-law becomes your daughter. You
right.
know, it's not like that's somebody outside. That's a part of the family too. Mm-hmm. So her opinions count, and she says, remember when Travis was little, I think mm-hmm. they said something about they yeah. wanted to get a home, and here they are, right back to the same place where Mom and Dad was, you know?
Ironically, we had the same, Walter and Ruth had the same exact kind of dream that Big Walter and Lena had. And it's kind of a heartbreaking moment to see is that if you don't change anything, we're going to end up right in this same cycle, just in this apartment after they pass on, still continuing this on, which is an amazing idea because, to what you said, everybody has a dream, but what happens when that dream gets deferred, like the play?
Well, and also because the system was completely set up mm-hmm. to not allow African-American people to own exactly. a house. I mean, the whole system was set up to block that from happening.
Oh, red line comes up.
Yeah.
and to that, so Mama goes and she takes a portion of the insurance money, right? And she doesn't tell them, she just goes. And she takes a portion of the insurance money and she puts a down payment on a house. Mm-hmm. They find out the house is not in an African-American neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And they're like, he's like, oh, is this what you call, like, you really did something for the family? Mm-hmm. But in her heart, she's like, yeah.
Right.
I wanted the best I could get, and this is the best I could get for my family. Mm-hmm. And she talks about, yeah, those houses they build for those colored people, well, you know, they ain't worth nothing. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
so
yes.
It's the same thing over and over. And you look at, that was what, early 1951 when she wrote this?
Yeah, yes. Not that long ago.
And like, what year is this? Come on.
Right, right,
right.
No.
Yeah, so it has so many levels, so much mm-hmm. different depth. And it's an American story.
Right.
And we as Americans, we want to be better. So hopefully seeing this, we'll do better.
How segregated does Bloomington Normal feel to you?
When I first came here, oh my goodness. When I first came here, I'm really dating myself. There were stoplights to get to ISU, okay? Mm-hmm. And so when I came, I was a country girl because I grew up in Mississippi, but my family moved north. And so when I came down, I was cool because I saw cornfields. Well, I grew up with cornfields, right? But then when I got to go to the classes and starting to find out a little bit more about the community, I found that, wow, this is a real strange place for me to be as a black person. Mm-hmm. And as I've lived here over the years, even though more people have come into town, more people can buy nicer homes and different things, there is still this populace that says, you stay there. Mm-hmm.
Oh yes.
And we go there. Mm-hmm. And I'm about the business of, I'm sorry, we're gonna come here. You know, so it's about, you find friends, it's like here at the theater or theater period. Our friends are multicultural, which is so wonderful because we can have honest, open conversations. That's one thing about artists. We want the truth.
Right.
You know, we go research and get the truth. And then it's up to us to make a decision which way we're going to go with that truth. Mm-hmm. And but this little town of these little twin cities, whatever you want to call them, there's a lot of growing yet to be done.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. I I actually told this to a friend who was on the city council, and he was shocked because I grew up in Chicago for over half my life. And I told him when I came and moved down to this area, I experienced more direct racism than I ever did living in Chicago. And he was shocked, left side. He didn't know what to say. He was like, what do you mean? I was like, I've been pulled over and profiled by the police more in Bloomington alone than I ever did in Chicago for anything. Mm-hmm. And even, well, not as much now since quarantine because I had to go outside, thankfully, as much. But even before, when I used to Uber and Lyft drive for a while, ironically, one of the things I learned is that having an Uber or Lyft sticker kind of gave me a free pass to be in those neighborhoods and not get the wrong look at because I was giving service in a neighborhood, not of people of color. So it made sense that I would be there. But I've driven in those neighborhoods before I had my sticker and had to be pulled over and asked what I was doing there. Wow. Who do I know in the area? What was I looking to do? Where was I going? Where have I been?
And what year is this?
Right.
Oh, was 2017.
No, I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, it could be happening today.
But
yeah.
From what I've heard, it's been a thing that's still happening because I've thankfully not had to do that anymore. But it's been even, actually, there's quite a hilarious story of me coming to a show here for Sister Act, the ones that we were in. And on the way from leaving downtown Bloomington to here, which is maybe at mess a 4-minute trip, it's almost a direct road, I was pulled over and stopped by the Bloomington High School by an officer who was unsure of what I was doing in the area and was questioning me and didn't believe that I was actually in the show till I told him he could just follow me to the theater. And at that point, he didn't want to call my bluff and let me go. Thankfully, I made it for open call, but it was quite a worrisome thing because I'm normally fairly punctual. Mm-hmm. Right. So yeah, it's still a thing that happens, but I like to think that things are getting better.
Yes.
Just painfully, excruciatingly slowly.
Right.
Bradley, what's your perspective on that as a young man in the area?
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, thank you for that question. I would just like to go back to the socioeconomic factor because it really shows, like, in the inner cities, you would see all these smoke towers, right? And it's not a good environment for those youth to grow up in. So with my kindness grant, BE, Bradley Courage's Kindness campaign, I've been able to help out some students at the Bloomington Housing Authority. So I gave them like clothes, toys, and books to make their lives better. And it relates back to the play because everybody wants to have a dream, but sometimes their dream can be deferred.
Yeah, right. Wow, absolutely. That's great. Absolutely.
Bradley is also the best well-spoken of us, by the way. We've accepted it. We accepted all this.
This is our future.
Thank you.
This is our future.
Bradley is one of the few people that gives me hope for the future.
Yes,
I can see why.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, this play and the Bloomington theater community is something that gives Linda and me a lot of hope for the Champaign-Urbana theater community, which doesn't have yet this sort of representation or even this sort of, I don't, wouldn't even use the word courage, but but there is courage, I think, in deciding you're going to do a play like this. Because we have not really found a theater company that's ready to say, I don't think we can cast it, is what the message usually is.
Right. Yes.
And so there's this whole cart and the horse thing that happens, and nothing happens.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're seeing some change, and we're trying to be part of that, and we're trying to make the awareness of what is with Coalescence. And now this is our first show ever with Community Players Theater, and it is really exciting to meet you. When I saw Jennifer was directing this, and then I just started messaging her, and we've been following all along.
Yes.
And so
we're so happy that you're here and that you guys are going to allow other communities to know that, you know what, look what could happen when you just open your arms and embrace, you know. And it's a great opportunity for dialogue. I always say, if people just be honest and sit down and have conversations. I'm a part of another organization that's called Culture Festival Incorporated. What I like about that organization is that that's multicultural. It always has been. That's always been its focus. And the opportunity is for different cultures to come together and just have a place to have conversation, to embrace each other, see what the differences are. And what you think is different, we're a lot alike, you know? And so I'm excited about what's going to happen once we hit the stage and we get
All right, so A Raisin in the Sun opens January 7th, which is what, Friday?
Yeah.
Friday.
And see what you can preview being tomorrow night,
okay.
6th, and I believe doors open at 6:30.
Doors open at 6:30. The lobby open. The theater opens up at 7, so you can sit down at 7.
Okay. And shows on so the preview, and then Friday, Saturday is 7:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. The Sunday shows are 2:30 p.m.
Yes.
And so that's for this coming weekend, and then the following weekend.
Yep. 14th through the 16th also.
Right. Okay. I love it when you have two weekend runs. Mm-hmm. So people, because sometimes people hear about it on a Thursday and don't get there. Mm-hmm. And so it's great.
That, yeah. And that gives us
opportunity to be
gives there. Us two shows to talk about it.
Right.
So we look forward